Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. The show is available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, friends, we'll grab a pencil in a little bit, but I got some new film that's coming into town, a slew of old video titles, and a couple new video titles, or at least new to me, and some tributes, and then we'll get to what you've been watching over the last week. But I do want to start with a salute to director and producer Ivan Reitman, who passed away last week at the age of 75, if I remember correctly. Yeah, 75. Here's a guy whose work, especially as a director in the late 70s, early 80s, for me, the trilogy of Meatballs, Stripes, and Ghostbusters, 1979, 1981, 1984. That's a pretty strong run. And, of course, he was one of the producers of National Lampoon's Animal House in 1978. His work as a producer and or as a director have an impact on this young little head of mine. This is whether it involved Bill Murray or not, although these did, as most of these has mentioned. But the young wise apple that I've been playing ever since has been a huge influence on these films. I revisited Animal House on Monday, as kind of a tribute, even though he was just a producer. Of course, John Landis directed that. And as I'm watching it, I realize this is as big a recruiting tool for the male college experience as All the President's Men was a recruiting film for young journalism students. Ladies, I'm sorry about National Lampoon's Animal House. It's just guys wrote it, or as Mrs. Soucy likes to say, made by boys for boys, and that definitely hits with Animal House. I do want to mention before he started hitting it big, there he had some work in Canada. He started out in Canada, born in from Czechoslovakia, then moved to Canada with his family, and it became a part of that web of comics that involved members of SCTV and Saturday Night Live and the branching out of that. But starting out as a producer with films like The Columbus of Sex in 1969, Foxy Lady in 1971, Cannibal Girls from 1973, Shivers from 1975, House by the Lake in 76, and Rabid in 1977 for you fans of horror films. And yeah, he was under the pseudonym of Julian Parnell, was a producer on Ilsa the Tigress of Siberia, for those who are into that, and Blackout in 1978. Of course, he directed Orientation, Foxy Lady, Cannibal Girls, Meatballs, I mentioned, 1979, Stripes, 1981, Ghostbusters, 1984, Legal Eagles, Twins, Ghostbusters 2, Kindergarten Cop, Dave, which is, if you're going to go back and check out some of his work, definitely revisit Dave. Junior from 1994, Father's Day from 1997, 6 Days, 7 Nights, they're not all hits, friends. Evolution from 2001, My Super Ex-Girlfriend from 2006, No Strings Attached from 2011, and Draft Day from 2014, all directed by Ivan Reitman. He also was a producer on Heavy Metal back in 1981, Yeah. So, and there's a few others. I'm like, okay. As I mentioned, they're not all hits. Casual Sex, Big Shots, Feds, Stop or My Mom Will Shoot, an executive producer on Beethoven's Second, Space Jam, Private Parts. Yeah. Road Trip, Disturbia, Post-Grad, Chloe. I'm just kind of stringing through these now. Yeah. Oh, God, I forgot. He was an executive producer on the Trailer Park Boys film, Countdown to Liquor Day. Wow. So, yeah, thank you, Ivan Reitman. Salute to you. For you cult fans out there, writer and director and also a production designer, but Alfred Soul passed away on February 15th at the age of 78. Now, best known, did five films as a director, Deep Sleep from 1972, Tanya's Island from 1980, Cheeseball Presents from 1984. That was for television. But the two he's best known for is the horror film Alice, Sweet Alice from 1976, which had a young Brooke Shields involved in that, and the slasher spoof Pandemonium from 1982. So salute to Alfred. The opening in theaters this week, and this is as I mentioned on previous years, when the Academy Award nominations come out, that means smaller films or international films start to get a wider recognition, a wider release. And because we're Indiana, because we're Indianapolis, it trickles down. And coming in the town this weekend at Can-Can, as well as Keystone Arts, is the Norwegian film The Worst Person in the World. Story of a medical student in Oslo who decides to get into psychology, and the film follows her life through several cinematic chapters. Renate Ravine, I hope I'm saying that right, is the star of this. Got Best Actress at Cannes. I thought she should have been nominated. You could easily replace, for me, you could easily replace Jessica Chastain or Nicole Kidman and for her in this. But it's funny because I got at times, it's not nearly as dark as Fleabag, which is another young woman kind of going through life cycles. But that's what it reminded me of a little bit. It's a fascinating look at this woman's world. The big selling point that I know people have talked about is when the world stops, but she doesn't. And that's worth checking out for that moment alone. But this is a really good look at a complicated woman, complicated person, really. And it's also up for Best Screenplay as well as Best International Feature, Best Original Screenplay. So you don't have to be just stuck in international feature film and that's it. So, it's funny, it's touching, it's cringe-inducing. It's 12 chapters with an epilogue and a prologue. So it's a film, I wouldn't say a film play, but it's a journey. And it's definitely worth checking out. The Worst Person in the World opening this weekend. Before we get to what you've been watching and what's been screening around town, I also had a stack of movies that I'm just trying to catch up on, which is, you know, the struggle is real. One of the best is from Film Movement out of Japan, a film called They Say Nothing Stays the Same. And it's the story of an aging ferryman. He's the guy with the little ferry that goes from one end of the lake to the other, played by Akira Emoto. And what happens when he's been doing this for all of his life, and what happens when a bridge is soon going to be built in the village that he lives in? We get some nice moments of him communicating or not communicating with the people who ride his ferry from one end to the other, and how this is going to affect his world with the bridge being built upstream. The film runs about 2 hours and 15 minutes. It's a slow-paced film, not a slow film, and that's interesting because there's a couple of films I'll be talking about that are shorter than this one and could have used some tight editing. But I didn't mind taking the journey with a very quiet, introverted man. Also, what happens when he finds a body that is floating in the water and it's not dead, and what he does to help this young woman who's in trouble. So look for They Say Nothing Stays the Same on Film Movement. On Indie Picks, a film called Sumaya, set in Paris, and what happens when a Muslim woman of color is out of nowhere fired from her airport transportation job. And this leads into a downward spiral, which involves getting arrested by the police, getting her house getting raided, having to go to court, and being hit with wall after wall after wall. And this is based on real events. This is kind of what it taps into the anti-terrorist policing that happened after the 2015 Paris terrorist attacks. The overreaction that a country, not just France, but a country can have when it comes to minorities and, well, heck, people that aren't like us or them in this case. So it's a frustrating story to watch, but you're really rooting for your lead. So check out Sumaya from IndiePix. Going through the pile of Kino Lorber classic films on Blu-ray, the best of the lot, and this is one I hadn't seen in a while, at least from start to finish. But the best of the lot is the Milos Forman film from 1999, The Man in the Moon, with Jim Carrey as Andy Kaufman. I have to say, it was revisiting this film again because I'm a big Milos Forman fan, and Carrey was one of those, and still kind of is to a certain degree, works well when he actually listens to his director and follows directions, as opposed to letting the camera roll and you just make up stuff and you take the best of it. Other comics do that as well. But this is one where Milos Forman apparently was obsessed with comic Andy Kaufman, loved and the recurring theme throughout this film, and this is not your standard biopic, of what is real and what is illusion, or what is real and what is a bit. And this was a huge deal in the 70s. We were used to jokes being a certain format and setup and punchline, and that was it. So the fact that Kaufman was doing things like the foreign man and mouthing along to the Mighty Mouse theme and wrestling women and playing Tony Clifton, and it just stunned people. But those who were on the avant-garde and the outer fringe really got it. And it's interesting because think about social media and how one becomes a celebrity nowadays. This kind of planted that seed for it. So you could thank/blame, I guess, Andy Kaufman for this. Excellent performance from Jim Carrey. He won a Golden Globe for this. There is a documentary about Jim and Andy where Carrey stayed in character while making this film. And just like Kaufman stayed in character as Tony Clifton, or if he had Bob Zemunda coming in to play Tony Clifton. But just another example, as well as Carrey is in this film, it's called acting, dear boy. Try it sometime. Because you have to work with others. You know, I think unless you're Daniel Day-Lewis, you may be a method actor, you're also going to be an irritant. The other thing that cracks me up about this film, and I was reminded, is you have the other part as far as illusion, what is real, is you have the people that were involved in Kaufman's life in this film. Jerry Lawler, the actress from Taxi. Danny DeVito's in it, even though he's not playing himself, he's playing Kaufman's manager. David Letterman and Paul Schaefer's band are in this film because they were part of some of the career events that happened in Kaufman's life. It was great to revisit, and there's some nice conversations with the screenwriters, the guys who gave us Ed Wood, among others. But yeah, this was the best of the lot. Still holds up, and now over 20 years later, planted the seed for what is celebrity and what is funny and how is it directed. So yeah, check out Man on the Moon from Kino Lorber Blu-ray. Also out on Kino Lorber is a 1967 fictional rock documentary called Privilege. And this is from Peter Watkins as a director, director Peter Watkins. And it's set in the not-too-distant future, not Mystery Science Theater, but a pop star played, it's named Stephen Shorter, played by Paul Jones. Yes, for you fans of Manfred Mann. And he is the biggest pop star in England, and his concerts are starting to become performance art, stuck in a cage, harassed by police. But he is a big enough star. This film came out in 1967. This comes in the wake of the aftermath of John Lennon saying that he thought, and some people thought, that the Beatles were bigger than Jesus. Didn't say better, but it caused a big backlash amongst the Beatles back in 1966. And so it shows how much power and influence that this pop singer had, and what happens when corporate America and political America, or corporate America, when corporate England and English politics start to play into his world. He has businesses, recording studios, not just the music. And this was done by Peter Watkins, was a documentary filmmaker, and it has a very documentary feel to it. Paul Jones is a fine singer, actor, and also Jean Shrimpton. This was, I believe, her first film, who was the original supermodel pre-Twiggy. You know, pretty to look at, not a whole lot of sparks in the acting department. The film's about an hour and 45. You could trim it a little bit. There's some performances near the end that you could clip along. We kind of get it. But I guess looking back, again, before Spinal Tap, before the Christopher Guest mockumentaries of concert films, it had to start somewhere. And so, yeah, it's an interesting footnote. I had not seen this before. But it works for the most part of making fun of pop and its influence, celebrity and its influence. So Privilege is out on Kino Lorber, as well as a 1976, I would say spaghetti western, but it's actually a western filmed in Israel called God's Gun, with Lee Van Cleef, Jack Palance, Richard Boone, Sybil Danning, and, yeah, Leif Garrett is in this as well. And this is a film that is produced by Golan Globus before they bought Canon Films. So on paper, a little side note history. The spaghetti westerns of the 60s and 70s, you had an Italian filmmaker, an Italian crew, usually shot in Italy or Spain. You often had an international cast whenever possible, so you could sell it in different countries. It helped if you had a Hollywood name. This one has a few names, up-and-comers, and those that the stars come, the roses come off the bloom a little bit when it comes to popularity. But the fact that this was shot in Israel, and this was, I believe, the third Western that was happening in that was shot in Israel. But it's the story of a small Western town. Young Johnny, played by Leif Garrett, his mother is a saloon gal, saloon woman, played by young Sybil Danning. For you know, guys who are my age, you know Sybil Danning's work. He's also under the guidance of the priest, Father John, played by Lee Van Cleef. Boy, a priest played by Lee Van Cleef. Don't be late for church. Richard Boone is the sheriff. And what happens when Jack Palance comes in? He plays Sam Clayton and his rowdy gang of nephews who come in the town and drink and grope and raise hell. And they wind up stabbing a guy to death. And Van Cleef's character, the priest, has enough guts and wherewithal to bring the killer back to justice without using a weapon. But the gang go back and release their fallen brother. And in the process, the priest is shot and killed. This is 30 minutes into the film. And just when you think it's a Janet Leigh and Psycho thing, as far as you're one of your guys who's above the title for billing, don't worry. Young Johnny runs away on horseback and finds the priest's twin brother, a gunfighter who is trying to get out of the business, also played by Lee Van Cleef. So, yeah, you get two performances from Lee Van Cleef. Can't really tell one for the other, except, one's dead and the other pops up. So there's that gimmick there. It's not a perfect film. There's some cool moments in it. This was directed by Frank Kramer, which is the American name given for the Italian director, best known for doing the Sabata trilogy. The use of the gunfighter coming in and wearing the priest's garb to poke revenge on Jack Palance and his gang is a nice touch. There's some cute camera work here and there, some rotating camera work. There's enough shots to the face and the head that this earns an R rating. The other part is with foreign films, and especially Italian films. I know this was shot in Israel, but I'll get to that. The Italian films were always dubbed in post. And that's just how it was, whether you were out in the desert or out in the city street. It was just loud, and you had to do it in post. The problem is when you have a film with Jack Palance and that distinctive voice that Palance has, and it's dubbed by somebody else, that's a major disappointment. I refer to it as you have a Ferrari of an actor, and he was dubbed by a smart car. So that's kind of a bummer. And Palance is good in this. There's more for him to do than just scowl and look nasty. He's having a good time running the town. Richard Boone, who plays the sheriff in this, Boone doesn't have a whole lot to do in this. He shows up at the beginning and kind of at the very end, but apparently left before filming was completed, said this was the worst film he has ever made. Look at Boone's IMDb. There's a couple other titles of debate, but I'll let you look into that. But it's funny because this came out in 1976, which was kind of the last gasp of the Western genre in the 70s. The same year this came out, you had John Wayne's last Western and his last film, The Shootist, which also had Richard Boone, and the Clint Eastwood epic, The Outlaw Josie Wales, and he wouldn't make another Western for almost a decade. So this one is a distant third when it comes to the international Westerns from the 1970s. But it's an oddity, and there is a good commentary by Alex Cox, the filmmaker, Sid and Nancy, Repo Man fame. Anytime you have Alex Cox doing a commentary, just elevates the experience much better. So the release of it is, the release of God's Gun is better than the actual film itself. Just an oddity when you have this many people involved of note, and just the little stumbles that kind of get in the way. Now, we have two other films from Kino Lorber Classics, both of which are another ones that I mentioned before, could use some cutting, could use some tightening up for a couple different reasons. The first one, and these are two films I had never seen from start to finish. So that's the other perk of the film show. But finally on Blu-ray from Kino Lorber Classic is Remo Williams' The Adventure Begins, with Fred Ward as a New York cop whose death is faked so he can join a new underground government organization run by Wilford Brimley and J.A. Preston. I want to make sure J.A. Preston gets some love in here. And there's a long sequence of Fred Ward's character, Remo, being renamed Remo Williams and getting into training so he can face off against a corrupt millionaire and his army. The film is directed by Guy Hamilton, who is known for doing Goldfinger and Live and Let Die. You also have one of the screenwriters who did some of the Bond films. And they're setting this up like it's going to be a series, a franchise, and kind of spoke too soon. It's almost like kind of similar to The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai. You have good folks in this, as I mentioned, J.A. Preston, Kate Mulgrew is in this. I forgot she was in this picture. And then we have Joel Grey. Joel Grey plays the martial arts master who trains Remo Williams. Yep, 1985, and Joel Grey is playing a Korean character in Yellowface. Now, as I was talking to my daughter about this, I was explaining that probably at the time, because Joel Grey is small and thin and very quick and fast on his feet, and the master who trains Remo Williams is a man who can literally dodge bullets. Yeah, even before, way before. A decade and a half before The Matrix. Ward is good. He brings his kind of smart aleck toughness to it and has to learn the hard way when dealing with his master, with his trainer. And some decent action scenes, as I mentioned, directed by a guy who's been known to do some Bond films, as well as Force 10 from Navarone, Evil Under the Sun. I just wish they had tightened up on the training sequences and got into the going after the millionaire and his army part in the last third of the film. The other one is a British drama from 1982 called The Final Option, and it stars Lewis Collins, for you fans of TV's The Professionals, which is a show I saw a few episodes of in England or in Scotland when we had some bad weather days during Fringe. But he plays a special service agent who goes undercover to infiltrate an anti-nuclear group that's led by Judy Davis. This is playing an American. This is right after her her big kind of introduction to the cinema world with the her performance in the film My Brilliant Career. And along the way, he infiltrates Captain Skellen is his name. Sorry. And what happens when he is able to utilize his actual knowledge of the SAS to assist this anti-nuclear organization whose plot is to take over the American ambassadors. We, about two-thirds of the way through the film, we do have cameos by Robert Weber, as well as Richard Widmark as two of the hostages. Edward Woodward is in this as well as one of the SAS superiors. Ingrid Pitt as a terrorist. And anyway, I won't get into that. But this is another one where the training sessions at the beginning could be shorter. We could get to the actual, once the hostage situation takes over the film, it moves at a pretty decent pace, but you could tighten it up a little more. But this is from director Ian Sharp. And, it works. It just could have been better for my taste. So, check out The Final Option. It's worth a rental. And, again, there's an audio commentary from Ian Sharp as well as the works of Owen Lloyd. That is also out on Blu-ray from Kino Lorber, Studio Classics. And it's not new, also from Kino Lorber, and we have this pattern. We have our own algorithms, friends. And after watching Animal House on Monday, and this film had wound up sent to, I got this in the mail, I bought this with my own money, on Blu-ray from Kino Lorber, but The Wanderers, which is a film I absolutely loved and I had not seen in a long, long time. I know and I'm going to talk about this a little bit more on next week's program, but I realized while watching this, another film from my younger days, but also the fact that the first three films I saw Karen Allen in were all period pieces, Animal House, The Wanderers, and Raiders of the Lost Ark. So I thought, well, there's a double feature of Animal House and The Wanderers. The gang film from Philip Kaufman in 1979 came out a few months after The Warriors, if I remember correctly. This is a much lighter film than Walter Hill's The Warriors, but it's an Italian gang in the Bronx in 1963, and the times they are a-changing. Based on the novel by Richard Price, this was Ken Wall's big break. I make fun of the 30-year-old actors playing high school students in Greece. Ken Wall was only 20 when he did The Wanderer, so there. But it jumps into the world of different gangs, and some are stuck in the 50s, and we find out some of the choices that you make and how it's going to affect your own life, especially with the Ken Wall character. We have a football scene or a football game with the Del Bombers, the all black gang. You get to see these little factions, and the Ducky Boys, which is the Irish Catholic gang, which kind of comes out of a horror movie more than anything. And if you were to do a list of scary moments in non-scary films, the Ducky Boys and the Wanderers would probably make my list. Definite. But it was just a fun film to watch again, and there's a great moment where Ken Wall's character winds up getting his girlfriend pregnant, and even though he has some eyes for Karen Allen, who is there's the great moment at the end where he sees her on the street and she's going into a Bob Dylan concert, and he's looking outside on the sidewalk through a window, hearing him sing The Times They Are a-Changin', and for Ken Wall's character, it's not. He's stuck in the world that he lives in. But a couple gang members are able to get out and head to San Francisco. So anyway, we'll talk about this a little bit more. There's a couple of commentary tracks on this. There's a theatrical and the director's cut. But it was great to revisit this after a very long Monday for me. So yeah, The Wanderers on Kino Lorber home video. You are listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Before we grab a pencil, let's find out what's going around town. Over at IU Cinema, On Monday at 7 p.m., Monday, February 21st, the 2017 documentary Speak Up, filmmaker Amandine Gay, and producer Enrico Bartolucci are scheduled to be present for a conversation moderated by Dr. Elena Guzman. Tuesday, February 22nd at 7 o'clock, the 2019 film Bombshell. There will be a post-screening Q&A with Zoe Peterson, director of the Kinsey Institute Sexual Assault Research Initiative, and Brenda Weber, the IU professor of gender studies. And Saturday, February 26th at 7 o'clock, the world premiere of the 1919 short silent film, Phil for Short, a silent film with live orchestral accompaniment of a world premiere score. That is Sunday, February 26th. And then just added Wednesday, March 2nd at 7 o'clock, West Side Story 2021. All of that is happening over at IU Cinema. Over at Can-Can, we mentioned The Worst Person in the World, The Power of the Dog. It's part of the Heritage series, Rosewood. Not enough people have seen that John Singleton film. You need to check that out. February 24th, Polyester with Vanity Rex for you John Waters fans. On February 25th, the Oscar-nominated short films. February 26th, Polystyrene, I Am a Cliché. February 26th, the Heritage series, A Most Beautiful Thing, and Red Horizon. All of that is happening over at the Can-Can. And at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin on Friday, 7:30 p.m., Sponsor's Choice on the big screen from 1973, High Plains Drifter. Saturday night at 7:30 p.m., Saturday, February 19th, also Sponsor's Choice, A Few Good Men. And Friday and Saturday, February 25th and 26th at 2 and 7:30 p.m., The Princess Bride. All of that happening at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. All right, friends, grab a pencil. And let's find out what you've been watching over the last week. Hopefully you've been able to watch some good movies that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. And we start on Twitter with, Scott Greenwell. His list includes Luca for Oscar season, Scream 5, big fan of the franchise, Batman Forever for background, and Batman and Robin for camp enjoyment. All right, thank you, Scott. Chewy Walrus writes, have watched almost the entire Texas Chainsaw Massacre franchise, all but the most recent, which I'll watch tonight. For the upcoming upcoming on Friday, plus Polar for my own podcast, okay, I'll mention it, at DisenfranchPod, and Tenet to inaugurate my new 4K player. Congratulations on the new player, Chewy Walrus, at DisenfranchPod, D-I-S-E-N. FranchPod. Steve Cook writes Death on the Nile in theaters and Encanto on Disney Plus. Thank you, Steve. Carrie writes hilarious and adorably nerdy First Contact movie, Paul. I remember that. Dan writes very lush Agatha Christie. I think he means Death on the Nile, just saying. Or he just digs Agatha Christie. Cameron writes, Nightmare Alley, enjoyable noir, beautifully shot. Thank you, Cameron. And I believe, yep, that's it on Twitter. We go to Facebook, and we go to last week's post, because that's what happens. Amy writes, it starts with a question. Maybe I'm a sentimental sap, but why was Rita Moreno not nominated for West Side Story? Well, Ariana DeBose was, and the question becomes, who do you take out of the nominees? But I think the fact that she's already won an award for this, and she is lovely in this. She really is. But I think especially if you're looking at all the performances in West Side Story alone, still, it's not the best, but I'm not going to start ranking those. So, I hope that answers your question, Amy. I know you're bummed. I understand. Sorry. Spencer writes, I watched The French Connection. Cassie writes, Encanto. Dustin writes, Capote and Ghostbusters Afterlife. Craig writes, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, prompted by Douglas Trumbull's recent passing. Thank you, Craig. I appreciate that. Jared writes, Misery. Homeschooler had to read it, so we got to watch it. There you go, Jared. Thank you. Nancy writes, Working on the Oscar-nominated films, The Eyes of Tammy Faye and Licorice Pizza. I liked Licorice Pizza a lot. Not perfect. The age thing was a bit problematic, and there's lots of running, but I loved it still. Yeah, well, age things are problematic. So, and it's captured in this movie. Beverly writes, Okja, Monty Python and the Holy Grail, and Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Wayne writes, Spencer and Eyes of Tammy Faye, both terrific. Jose writes, Muscle Shoals. Kim writes, Chi-Town, a documentary that follows basketball player Kiefer Sykes, who just joined the Indiana Pacers in late 2021, as well as Hitsville, The Making of Motown. Thank you, Kim. Another Kim, different Kim, writes, Play Misty for Me. Bonnie writes, The Eyes of Tammy Faye. Taylor writes, Death on the Nile, the David Touche and Kenneth Branagh versions, The Courier, Key Largo, and Birds of Prey. Jed writes, Watched Meet Me in St. Louis with Judy Garland for the first time. Really enjoyed it. Halloween back then was wild. Yeah, it was, Jed. I know. And also watched Each Dawn I Die with James Cagney and George Raft. Awesome film. Thank you, Jed. Vin writes, The Lovely Bones. I love Mark Wahlberg and Michael Imperioli. I'm sorry I watched this one. Wow. Nick writes, Nick Rogers, Moonfall, Kimmy, Big Bug, Marry Me, I Want You Back, and Escape from Mogadishu. Lou Harry writes, Are You With It? Time Out for Rhythm, Rogue One, Marry Me, and Kimmy. Mary writes, Groundhog Day. Kevin writes, Laurel Canyon and Echoes of Laurel Canyon. Now that is a double feature. Thank you, Kevin. Frank writes, We Need to Talk About Cosby. Manny writes, Saw Death on the Nile and Moonfall last weekend, but it's been mostly TV for me. HBO's Euphoria, Somebody Somewhere, which he deemed a perfect show, The Gilded Age of Masterpiece Theater, The Gilded Age and the Masterpiece Theater adaptation of Around the World in 80 Days, starring David Tennant. Thank you, Manny. Martin writes, Ghostbusters Afterlife. Stephanie writes, rewatched a bunch of Ivan Reitman movies. I'm with you, Stephanie. I understand. Don writes, Big Bug, Reno 911, the search for QAnon, wouldn't recommend either one of them. Abby writes, The Tragedy of Macbeth. Denzel did a great job, and Catherine Hunter, who played the Weird Sisters, deserves all the awards, and Don't Look Up. Yeah, I really like Catherine Hunter in Macbeth. The first time I saw her in something, my lovely wife and daughter and I got to see, it was National Theater Live's production of A Midsummer Night's Dream, and she played Puck. And she's a 50-something contortionist and plays all three witches, the Weird Sisters in Macbeth, as well as I just mentioned. So, yeah, definitely fine stuff there. Kate writes Clute and then asks, Did you know that Donald Sutherland was once a very young man? Yes, Kate, I am older than you. I saw MASH. I even saw Castle of the Living Dead from 1964 when that was on my local television. And yeah, just watched him again in Animal House. And more than one person has said to me, Listen, I'm not joking. This is my job, which is his famous line in Animal House. Sean says, Don't forget his turn as Jesus Christ. That's right. That's Johnny Got His Gun for you Metallica fans out there. Gary writes, Forgotten Women, Night of the Bloody Apes, Curse of the Doll People, Outfoxed, and Nashville. Jessica writes, Life Force, Naked Lunch, Shadow in the Cloud, and Always Be My Maybe. Jessica, good timing there. I just got Life Force in the mail last week, so I will hopefully be watching that very soon. Mark writes, Hang 'em High. Patty writes, Death on the Nile. I liked it. Great casting, visually stunning, and I enjoy Kenneth Branagh's take on Poirot, though I do acknowledge the David Suchet supremacy. Death on the Nile is one of my favorite of the Agatha Christie novels, so I was more enjoying watching how it all played out. But there was a teenager behind me who apparently didn't know the plot, and when the reveal was of what happened, the kid did the stage whispered, What? It was what? What a wonderful movie experience. Yeah, as I mentioned in last week's show, I liked Death on the Nile, faults and all, at least the issues I had with it. And I wish I'd seen it with a big crowd. I wound up seeing it with the critics. And we're a quiet lot. But to hear an audience reaction with something like this, especially if they don't know it, I mean, that's what made Murder on the Orient Express such a fun experience. So hopefully that is happening again with Death on the Nile. Michelle writes The Conjuring. Gail writes, I'll check the email, Gail. Thank you. Eric writes, First View, Spencer, rewatches The Long Goodbye, Starting Over, and Mississippi Burning. And then plus Netflix is Made, in which Andy McDowell is absolutely wonderful. Yes, she is. Mike writes, Selma. John writes, Long Story Short. Joellen writes, Rebecca, with the note, Happy 80th Anniversary. Dylan writes, I showed Yellow Submarine and Romeo and Juliet at the Walter Paisley Movie House on Saturday. Lots of kids seeing the Beatles animated for the first time and several millennials experiencing their first trauma film. Way to go, Dylan. Keep fighting a good fight. Keep showing those. Gene writes, The Last Duel and Fallen. Joshua writes, Spencer, Glory, The Hangover 2, and Kimmy. Michael writes, The Best of Enemies, The Princess Bride, and The Last Duel. Doug writes, some 2022 Oscar nominees, Drive My Car, The Worst Person in the World, Parallel Mothers, Coming to America, Attica, Hand of God, plus some animated shorts, Affairs of the Art, Bestia, Robin, some live-action shorts, The Dress, The Long Goodbye, and documentary shorts, Audible, Lead Me Home, The Queen of Basketball, three songs from Benazir, also Cabaret and Love and Mercy from 2014. Doug, it's another one. I found Love and Mercy on Blu-ray last week. It's on the pile. Julia writes, Mass, Drive My Car, and Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again. Wow, that's not a triple feature. Britt writes, The remake of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. LBO writes, Brand Apart from Jean-Luc Godard, My Night at Maud's, and Le Notte Bianche from Visconti. Daniel writes, Don't Look Up, and The Horn Blows at Midnight. Michelle writes, Tombstone. Kevin writes, CBGB. Janet writes, Sunset Boulevard, It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, King Kong, 1976, The Mirror Has Two Faces, and The French Connection. Cassie writes, I am not your Negro, as well as Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Allison writes, Nightmare Alley, and I don't get the Oscar nomination. It was slow and didn't really go anywhere. I kind of disagree with that, but okay. Pat writes, the original Westworld. JJ writes, Don't Play Us Cheap from Melvin Van Peebles. I'm glad somebody else has seen that. That's a pretty good film musical, literally filmed on a stage. It's not quite National Theater Live, but a cool point of musical theater with an all African-American cast in the early 70s. Well done, JJ. Guillermo del Toro's Nightmare Alley, the 1974 Murder on the Orient Express, and the 2022 Death on the Nile. Spencer, and I Want You Back on Amazon. That one is really easy rom-com to watch. Would recommend. Thank you, JJ. Steven writes, Body Heat, M, the Met in HD broadcast of Fire Shut Up My Bones, and the Peter Bogdanovich Buster Keaton documentary, The Great Buster, A Celebration. Thank you, Steven. Melissa writes, Nightmare Alley, Death on the Nile, and Marry Me. Sean writes, No Time to Die, and Star Wars. Rachel writes, The Legend of Hay, and In the Line of Fire. Sean writes, The 1989 Phantom of the Opera with Robert Englund and American Folk. James writes, Jules and Jim. Keith writes, The Associate, The Negotiator, Flower Drum Song, The Harry Potter Series, Fatal Instinct, Mississippi Burning, Jolt, Fatal Beauty, A Time to Kill, The Croods and The Croods of New Age, as well as Marry Me. Tom writes, To Have and Have Not. Frank writes, Big Bug, Great Fun. Devin writes, Hotel Transylvania 2. Carrie writes, Tammy Faye and the Eyes of Tammy Faye and The Book Club. Ben writes, Picnic at Hanging Rock. Man, what a beautiful movie. Agreed, Ben. Denise writes, finally got to see Kingsman, The Secret Service. Jeff writes, Live and Let Die, Tick, Tick, Boom, and Marry Me. Austin, Medium Cool Podcast. We finally talked about Bergman. The Tragedy of Macbeth and Big Bug. Cassandra writes, Marry Me. The initial premise is so very far-fetched, but it was a very charming and very funny movie. Sarah Silverman is brilliant. Totally wish I could do comedy parts like her. You liked it more than I did, I think, Cassandra. The more J-Lo and Owen scenes we had, the better. Didn't need as many people in the outer circle, but I know that's the point. And Cassandra, you could be funny. So keep at it. Tony writes Spencer. Jamie writes Jungle Cruise. Anthony writes Lily's in the Field. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. Eddie Murphy's Raw. The Stand. Casablanca. For Colored Girls. Spencer. Moonstruck. Brokeback Mountain. And Willow. Kathy writes The Body. Fried Green Tomatoes. And The Day After Tomorrow. Lizzie writes The Worst Person in the World. Raging Bull. And Kramer versus Kramer. Mary writes, watch The Father again, this time to appreciate the details of the sets, costuming, etc., and watch the bonus features. Definitely worth seeing at least twice. Thank you, Mary. Mike Perry, how you doing, buddy? Said he watched Spider-Man No Way Home. David writes, Mr. Warrant, Dom Rickles. Megan writes, High School Musical. Really? Aaron writes, Encanto, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, Kimmy versus the Reverend. Joan writes Ordinary People. Gretchen writes Tick, Tick, Boom. Susanna writes Terms of Endearment, The Lost Daughter, and Spencer. Jeff says Kimmy is pretty good. Tom writes Rick Burns, brother of Ken, in a great documentary, The Donner Party. The X-Files, I Want to Believe, and The Best Years of Our Lives, which ought to be required viewing. Thank you, Tom. I'm with you there, and I love The Best Years of Our Lives. Carvin writes Laura, 1944. Linda writes, sorry, no need to be sorry, just binge Emily in Paris, doesn't count, but couldn't stop. Linda, it's okay. We watch what we watch. It's all right. Robert Muggy writes, The Hand of God, Flea, Attica, Spencer, and The Eyes of Tammy Faye. Jennifer writes, Nightmare Alley, really good. James writes, Signs. Michael writes, High Sierra, The Player, and The Third Man. Terry writes, The Master, and The Tragedy of Macbeth. Pamela writes, Spencer, watched Pig again, and although not a film, The Gilded Age. I need to get cast in this somehow. Seriously. Thank you, Pamela. Mickey writes, Palmer, really surprising. Amanda also writes Palmer. She also writes Spencer. Moveen writes, Documentary Week. Tina. The Tina, What a Life She Had, Truman in Tennessee, An Intimate Conversation, Time by Garrett Bradley, the Sundance Award winner, Capote Tapes, and The Lost Leonardo. Ronald writes, just saw Kenneth Branagh's Death on the Nile last night. And finally, Missy writes, Goodfellas. And there you go, friends. That's what you've been watching this week. So hopefully you've been able to watch some good movies that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. I want to end this week's show with a little audio tribute and a story that goes with it. I'm going to play for you a song by Ann Peebles. And it's a song from 1971 called Trouble, Heartaches, and Sadness. I play this because the drummer on this, Howard Grimes, passed away last week at the age of 80. And started out as a session player at Stax, but really got known for his work on High Records, working with Willie Mitchell. He played on a slew of recordings, which hopefully you have in your collection. He's the one on Let's Stay Together by Al Green, I Can't Stand the Rain by Ann Peebles, Trying to Live My Life Without You by Otis Clay, Syl Johnson. I mean, just a slew of players as a member of the Bo Keys. And I played this song from Ann Peebles, Trouble, Heartaches, and Sadness. And this is now my favorite Ann Peebles song. No disrespect to I Can't Stand the Rain or I Feel Like Breaking Up Somebody's Home. Because what how it got caught in my head, in my ear, is the use of this song in the film 3 Days to Kill, which is a really forgetful 2014 action film starring Kevin Costner, Haley Steinfeld, Connie Nielsen, Amber Heard. It's kind of a McGee, so the guy who directs the action films, but it's kind of an updated version of DOA, and Costner's just gruff and trying to, you know, find the drug that could get him out of his crisis. But they use this song at the beginning, and it just works. In fact, it's the thing I remember the most about 3 Days to Kill. So I guess thanks, McGee, or whoever put together the music, Luc Besson, whatever. But yeah, here's as a tribute to Howard Grimes, as heard in the film 3 Days to Kill, here's Ann Peebles with Trouble, Heartaches, and Sadness. And we'll do this again next week. Thanks for listening. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
Let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
Parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!